Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, welcome to the 406th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Reese Miles-Thomas and Kevin O'Brien. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we are doing our 2024 New Year panel. We have three amazing directors joining us, and on a very special episode of Just Shoot It, we have our editor, Noah Bayshore, and our producer, Tyler Small, also joining us, which is really cool. Our directors are Roxy Shee, Carlin Hudson, Maureen Barucha, all previous guests. We all love them very much. Maureen, if you haven't listened to her episodes, was a longtime director on Jimmy Kimmel. She's now just directed Pitch Perfect, I think, this past year. She did a couple movies. She had a South By movie a couple years ago. She's moving and shaking and doing a lot of cool things in TV and film.
She had two South By movies. She had like consecutive South By
movies. Oh, both their movies? Played at South By? Crazy.
Yeah.
Another South By alum, Carlin Hudson. She is a writer. She's a member of the Writers Guild. She's a striker. She wrote a movie for Netflix. She has made a few features. She directs a ton of commercials for Imposter, the production company, and others. And is like the honorary co-host of the show.
Yeah.
And we have Roxy Shee, who has also been on many episodes, who you met as a producer, but recently making a lot of awesome things.
Yeah, she's been directing longer than she's been producing, I would say, at this point. Yeah.
In the past few years, she's been 100% directing.
And teaching, which is new.
And teaching, yeah. She's made quite a few other features. She directed TV episodes. She did an Eli Roth anthology show. And I believe she beat both of us out for a horror digital series back in the day.
That's true. For Shudder, I want to say.
Yeah. So yeah. She is awesome. It's a fun episode. It's a fun chat. We talk about our goals for this year. We talk about how we think the landscape has changed. I poo-poo on everyone's philosophical ideas. And Matt grimaces a lot whenever I say anything, but you won't be able to see that on the podcast, unfortunately. But he is doing
it
now.
You feel it. You can sense it. Yeah. Basically, the subtext is, you know, someone will say like something beautiful and heartfelt, and Orin is secretly thinking, but what about money?
Yeah, or like, is that really sustainable? Or are you really happy for your friend that took your job? Come on, let's be real here. I will say we have listener Matt Urey emailed me recently, another talented director and DP, and he was telling me that listening to our podcast, whether we're excited about our wins or bummed about our losses, makes them feel less alone as a filmmaker. And so I think whether we're happy or sad, complaining or excited about our new found strategies to do this insane job, I think people appreciate it, and we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram @justshootitpod and DM us, tag us, tell us stuff. Because we want to hear about whether you're getting anything out of this. And it's 2024. We started the podcast in 2015, almost a decade. You better be ready for our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. We better have something good by then. If you want to keep the show going, though, and help us prepare a little bit more, help keep the show alive, paid for, We pay Noah to edit the show. It takes a lot of time to put the show together. And so if you go to patreon.com/justshootitpod to drop us a couple bucks, that would really be appreciated. Now's a good time of year to do it. You know, you get started. Again, a buck, $4, $5, $10. You know, we're looking for something that you probably wouldn't notice or feel. And it will go a long way towards just making the show. So if you get anything out of it, if you find any value in it, consider throwing us a couple bucks. Well, without further delay, let's hop into our 2024 new panel with Roxy, Carlin, and Maureen, and Tyler and Noah.
And Matt.
And Oren.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 2024 New Year panel, where we talk about the new year, because we've already talked about the old year.
We've got goodbye 2023, hello 2024.
We've got an awesome group of people. We have awesome directors, first time guest Carlin Hudson.
Okay, shut up. Oh,
Carlin is a director and writer. It's been on many times. Thanks for coming, Carlin. We've got...
I regret it already.
Skeptic, famous skeptic, Roxy Shee.
I hate everything. What's up, guys?
And we have fabulous director that isn't allowed to talk about anything she's doing right now, Maureen Barucha. Thanks for coming to the podcast. And we also
Maureen
have
does mean mysterious in Gaelic, so I have to live up to my name. I'm mysterious Maureen.
Definitely. And we have Noah Bayshore, our editor, is on also. Hey, Noah. And we have Tyler Small, our producer, wearing a Just Shoot It hat.
Hello. How you like that?
Thanks for joining us. We just wanted to talk about the new year. You've all been on the podcast before, so we can skip our backstories and let's talk to Carlin. What's happening? 2024.
Oh.
What do you think
about?
What do you think about directing this year? Has it changed?
Hold on, you have to offer her a bottle of water first, Oren.
Is that
so? What are you into?
Well, I'm from a town in Texas. Wow, you know, I'm not even. I read your email, and I don't even know that I'm prepared to answer this, because if we've learned anything, we've learned not to expect anything at all, right? It's like Every year has been a weird year for the past few years. So what's normal anymore? I don't know what normal is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But know, do you think maybe that is what's normal? Like, right. You know, I might have talked about this before. We had Rebecca Niles, who's the EP at the production company I work with, on the podcast. And when she was, you know, convincing me to join the production company, I was like, well, I'm at this other company and it's really slow right now and there just isn't a lot of work. So obviously they aren't getting me a lot of jobs. And she said, she's like, when things aren't slow, it's everyone can get you a job. And you can get yourself jobs. You don't even need a production company or reps. You know, it's like good reps are the people that can get you jobs when things are slow, when things are weird, when there's a pandemic, when there's a strike. Like that's like when, you know, is like our time to shine. And I don't know about you guys, but since I moved to LA, I've never had like an easy year where everything right. was like super normal and like went exactly yeah. as expected.
I mean, yeah. to be fair, though, yeah. I think we've all been reading a lot of headlines. Like, you know, I think the Hollywood Reporter called it the worst year for filmmakers of a generation. Right.
Yes.
Like this is like an exceptionally hard year for people. Especially if you're impacted some way by the strike, right? I think like yeah. that's the pandemic yeah. made things rough. And then, so I'm trying to remember, like last year, were we thinking about the strike during this conversation? I don't think so.
No. I don't think so. No, I think it was like November that like things were shutting down. So probably it was like end of the summer that the rumbles of like things are gonna, it's gonna be bad.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
but also, wait, Caroline, are you WGA? I forget.
Yes. Yes, I am.
So you're the only one of us that actually was in a striking union Ooh.
Position.
Ooh. Well, let me tell you, it was awesome. It was really cool. it definitely needed to happen. And I think, it was not that you've asked my opinion, but yeah, yes, I am union proud.
You know, you think, not only was it hard for filmmakers to get through this past year with the longest strike in like filmmaking history, but also being millennials and being so anxiety crippled, like those just double fisting, like those two burdens this past year has just been so overwhelming. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
I just think that the past couple of years we've been so desensitized, you know, and my January is always surprised. I'm sorry, you haven't even asked me how I'm feeling yet, Oren, but I'm just answering for you. But like, I've always felt very depressed during the start of the year because things are so slow and blah, blah, blah. And the reason why it feels different this year is I think collectively we're just like, enough is enough. The industry is like so eager to get things back and starting,
yeah.
you know, so many exciting phone calls are already happening. The most I've had like so many calls these past 2 days versus like, how much I would get in a month in the past few years, you know?
Awesome.
So something's shifting, y'all.
Yeah, I feel like that too. I feel like there's like, yes, the past few years have been so much of like push and pull or like, you can't really count on anything. But yeah, was it kind of always that way, but it's just more of an extreme version now? Or I actually feel like I'm more hopeful actually going yeah. into 2024 because I think, yes, it was really difficult. I think it was worse. The strike was worse than the pandemic because at least during the pandemic, there was some work yeah. here and there, or like, you're like, it's going to come back. And then like the strike to me was like, things will never be the same. And I don't think they ever will be the same, but I actually think in a way they've cut back so much and they've pruned back so much that to me, what I keep thinking is that that means that there's only room for growth, mm-hmm. that like only good stuff can grow in its place because it's been pruned so hard. And so in some ways, I think maybe people that are like us and that are like listening to this podcast are the people that are going to thrive because I think, and when I say dinosaurs, I mean, that could be, you could be young or old and be a dinosaur, that mentality. I actually think that like coming out of the pandemic, I keep calling it the pandemic, the strike.
It kind of is
a pandemic
though, right?
Too. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that I think actually people that can deliver things that look good on a lower budget, that can pivot, that can like think fast on their feet are going to be the ones to be successful. Mm-hmm. And kind of the old way of thinking of like the slow moving studio where you have all the money, those people aren't going to be able to be nimble like we are. And the new people coming in are going to have a harder time.
So yeah. I actually think this like middle area where people have more skills in more areas are actually going to be, maybe there's like a renaissance. That's what I am hopeful for.
Mm-hmm. But I do you think that. That's true? Like, I feel like ever since I started working in Hollywood, you know, like whatever, 15 years ago, people are like, well, it's like the old people don't know how to work with small budgets. And that's where you come in. You can be, yeah. do everything. Yeah, you're like a one man band.
I think that's definitely true. That's definitely true.
But I feel like it feels really true now because of so many different, like, not to be like TikTok, but like there's like so many more outlets. And I feel like these big studios are seeing that, like, I think we had such an influx of like stuff. We just had garbage. We just like make, nothing gets a chance to survive. And now that they've pruned back everything, I do think maybe that show that they've tried to do a million times with the same kind of guy isn't going to work because it hasn't worked.
Right. So but like Vince Gilligan or Michael Bay or these people that are the ones that have the biggest budgets in the world, they're not going anywhere. It's not like they're the ones getting pruned. The people getting pruned are the people that are like getting one episode of TV a year, getting two commercials a year, you know, getting.
See, I think it's the people that are getting like 15 episodes of TV, because I've heard so many of that old school guard being like, I used to get 12 to 15 episodes a year. And you're like, dude, like, what about the generation below you that gets like a couple a year? Like, to put some of the fucking pie back. Like, So I think, you're always going to have those big tentpole guys. But even that, I think, is like showing that, like, you can't count on them to give you a hit either.
No.
The cavalry is not coming.
Yeah.
The cavalry is not coming.
Sorry. I don't know. Like, I think it is the same old story, but something does feel different. I think there is a real shift.
I think there is the flip side also of, like, unfortunately, there's a lack of mentorship and training grounds. You know, I think there's actually a lot of talk about that lately. And so there's a generation of filmmakers that we're going to have to figure out what to do who haven't had the opportunities to work with a medium or moderate size crew, right? Like the Funny or Die or College Humor or just a branded content. Those places where you could first have a crew of like 10 or 15 people and like have a budget and have a client and like learn in a lower stakes environment, that stuff has gone away. And so I think that's the other part of the equilibrium swing. It's like that old guard, those dinosaurs can't operate. And the people who came up scrappy, I think, can. And then if you're just like an incredible filmmaker on TikTok, you're left in a lurch because, you know, the act of filmmaking is, you know, running a small company as much as it is knowing where to put the camera.
I also think, like, out the gate of this like strike, when I say dinosaurs, I don't mean age. I just mean like mentality of like how you shoot. I think they are going to get most of the jobs. I think you're seeing it now. There's still like a fight for like the couple jobs that are around. But if you look at like TV, for example, like there aren't a lot of shows that have been greenlit. So they're not like a lot of new shows. There are already shows that like went down during the strike or they're about to go into production. So you're seeing them still get the jobs at this moment. But I do think that like people will drop out. Like there's going to be those opportunities. I think it's going to be harder and it's going to be more competitive for a bit. But also like maybe I think it's going to be competitive in a good way where it's like, we've seen that story a million times. What new thing are you bringing to the table? What new perspective? I think the things that like probably women and people of color have been told the whole time is like, well, what makes your perspective of, it's like, we're all in the same boat now, you know, it's like, how do you tell something that's different that we haven't seen?
I do totally agree that it is like, I think Tyler, you know, who just moved to LA very recently this is a good time to kind of get into the industry. Like the whole, like buy low, you know, sell high. Like a lot of people kind of, you know, I think couldn't survive like the last year. Right. And decided to like change careers and decided like, oh, this thing, I thought, you know, I did 28 episodes of Scrubs or whatever, seasons of Scrubs, you know, like, and all of a sudden I can't get a job to save my life and pay my mortgage. And
you're no Superman.
Yeah. I mean, I came to LA during the last writer's strike. So that's why it felt really, that's when I started. I came out of 2008.
Must have felt like traumatizing, re-triggering. Yes.
It was like, this is a weird full circle.
Yes.
But it was like a great time to start. Like, cause you're like, people are out in the street, people kind of connected again. And you're like, people, like, let's make shows. Oh, I haven't seen you in a long time. Like, I think like the community got stronger. And that's what I feel like feels the hopeful part, is that the community and the bonds of like what we're doing in this industry, making art, telling stories, like that got stronger.
I'm curious, just like brass tacks, Maureen, I follow you on Instagram and everyone else should. And I saw, you know, you'd spent a lot of time kind of like on the, like on the picket lines and kind of going to different things and standing with WGA and SAG and stuff. I'm curious, and I know that you've booked, you have a bunch of fun things coming up this year already. Like, do you think that your time spent like on the picket lines, kind of re-meeting people, like meeting people, like just kind of being part of the community was like helpful in any of this stuff, like career-wise? I know people think of this as like a bad thing, but I mean it as a good thing, you know?
I think like, yes, I think why it was positive. I feel like I wasn't out there being like, I'm going to go meet all these writers and then talk to them about like craft. Cause I think some of my writer friends were being like, oh no, like some people were doing that. I think for me, it was more like I would see where my friends were and be like, oh, I haven't seen them in a while. Let me go to that where they're picketing, or like, you should meet this person. Like I was actually connecting friends that were out on the strike lines that didn't know each other. And I was like, oh my gosh, you should meet this person. They're over at CBS. You're over at CBS. And that was just like fun. And it ended, and I would go for like an hour or 2 hours. And I think it did help. I think it was like, also it was important, especially if you're working in TV. I don't know why more directors weren't out there, because writers are our coworkers. So you're like, even though we weren't, the DGA wasn't striking, which is totally fine, I was surprised that I didn't see more directors out there supporting some of their writer friends or their coworkers that, you know, you work together in TV in such a close way.
Well, Carlin, you, like we said, are one of the only people here that is in a union that was striking. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it affected you? I mean, I know as a commercial director, you still worked a lot in 2023.
Yeah. I mean, I really am hoping, I'm like thrilled to hear Roxy and Maureen, and I'm hoping to take that positivity, but I don't, from a writing standpoint, think it's so great yet. I think that the second half, my prediction, if I were a gambling woman, would be the second half of the year might be better. I think the first half's going to be pretty rough. The good news is I think that a lot of us, like not many writers that I know of actually wrote specs during the strike. I mean, some perhaps did, but it was so stressful. You know, it's like, no one is super creative when you're like, how the fuck am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? You know, it's not like a comfy time in which to be creative and free and think of these really cool new ideas.
Yeah, you're not fun employed. You're
right.
I had writer's block during the whole strike.
Right. Me
too. Writer's block.
I eked out a shitty draft of something, which, you know, is a first as a vomit draft. But now I feel like I have some mental space to like dig back into a new project. So I don't know. Maybe other writers are doing the same. I know a few that are, but yeah, I think until April, May, I don't really know. They're just seeing where budgets are. I don't know. Super positive, but I'm not like doom and gloom. I think like this is still $1 billion industry. Like there's still many millions of billions of people.
Yeah, you know, in 2024. Money, $1 billion is actually pretty small.
Right. So there's still demand
for this
stuff.
Trying to manifest a billionaire so that I don't have to work anymore. So if any of you know one, please.
A billionaire set you up.
I want a billionaire so I get to work.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. That's so very different, Maureen.
Roxy is working, but crocheting is just a different industry.
It's a different deal. You know, as directors, we often are brought on later in the process, in the workflow, right? Like somebody has to pitch and sell and then develop and then get a pilot greenlit before we're involved. Mm-hmm. So, but there were a lot of think pieces about how we thought that everyone was going to write an incredible spec. And then as soon as the strike was over, everyone was going to sell everything. And there was going to be this glut of awesome new content. And that didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
You know, people are pointing fingers every which way. It sounds like you've kind of internalized all that. And is it that you think that people are still, like you were saying before, figuring out budgets, or like walk us through that a little more?
Yeah, I think newsflash, I'm not an economist, but I'm about to talk about the economy because I think that this is all
financial advice.
Okay, great. Warren has given me some bad financial advice, so do not listen to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I told you to buy The Tesla.
Okay. So I think what is happening in the economy and the box office and all of these things are coinciding with our industry having a contraction, right? So it's not like we're working in a vacuum. We're also in an economy that is recovering and that is doing better than people thought that it would. But it's like there's even though the economy is doing okay and inflation is down, we still have this feeling that things mm-hmm. are terrible. And right. that feeling is also making its way into the executive suites. And so they're nervous. You know, we see right. this in commercials too. It's like, it's not like there's not actually money out there, but there's this hesitancy to spend it. And that's what I feel.
In the same way that you're not an economist, none of the executives are either. Do you know what I mean? So it's all based on just a gut feeling.
Also not creatives usually.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm hopeful that once sort of like the dust settles and like after Sundance, you know, we're always looking like what sells at Sundance, what sells at South. But, you know, hopefully also, I don't know. I just think there's still like a little bit of people are dipping their toes back in the water, but they're slowly making their way back in. And it's going to be a slow process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is my perspective.
Yeah. It feels like people are also like unsure about whether or not they want to commit. Right. Like everyone's newly single. And they don't want to get hitched right away, right?
Totally.
Yeah, we've all gotten a divorce.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you listen to The Town, the podcast, they're pretty much like, their view is like, none of these companies make any money, you know? Like,
I don't understand.
It doesn't make any sense.
And so, well, nobody has
Netflix
cable,
is
you know?
Making money.
Everyone's just gambling. Oh,
here's the thing. I do think, like, I'm hoping for that, like, we talk about this a lot at DGA stuff, is like having windows come back. And I think you are seeing that happen. And that's how money will come back in, where it's like, if shows have windows on certain platforms and they sell to other platforms, or if we have a theatrical, and now you're seeing like, oh, there is a benefit to have it in a theater for a run. It's like, oh, wow, that old model worked. Like,
crazy.
You know, having it go to syndication on another right. platform, like, right. oh my God, I can make money again. So I think you're slowly seeing that happen. And so that, I think, is a way to like bring back some of the industry and ways that the industry can make money off of creative things.
Yeah.
Do you guys, Noah and Tyler, do you guys go to the movie theater ever?
Yeah. I had like those movie pass. And so I would go like once every 2 weeks, but
you had movie pass like 3 years ago.
It's back now. It's different.
Our AMC has one. AMC, yeah. I don't know how they make money on that thing.
Me neither. Yeah. I'm going to the movie every week. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's all concessions.
Oh, you are, Carlin?
Yeah, I go to AMC all the time. I love AMC.
Me too.
Yeah.
And what about you, Noah? I guess I'm asking because I feel like your generation doesn't really care to go to the movies that much. And like for me,
this is
you know,
selecting group though, like they work on.
You are wearing a hat that says PG-13 on it.
Oh my God. That's cool.
You know, what actually makes me think of this too is like, again, the movie that I made, The Prank, is finally got sold and it's going to get distribution. It's going to come out theatrically. But what's really kind of fun is I had gone to the John Waters exhibit. I don't know if anybody has gone to that in LACMA. It's so good.
John Waters.
But it was like, what it made me kind of remember was like, oh, back in the day, you're like, they had those event midnight movies, right? Like Pink Flamingos was that midnight movie, Eraserhead. And it's like, it was funny because right before I was like, gosh, we need to bring back those of like, that's kind of what Barbenheimer was, but it doesn't always have to be the big, huge studio movies.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, maybe there will be, and that's kind of how our movie sold, is to like a smaller place that does theatrical, fun, event style theatrical releases. And so I kind of have, and it was again hope that maybe that's going to be, because people want to go to, even though we are streaming and we're on TikTok and we're on stuff, I think you're always going to want to do an event or like some experience, you know. And so hopefully maybe movies can be more experiential than just going to the mall and going to a movie on a Thursday night, you know.
So Noah, you do go to the movies?
Yeah, I try to go a fair amount. Like we have an AMC around here and like Celebration Cinema, and I'd go there for the A24 movies type stuff that like come out, and then like whatever kind of bigger blockbustery type of thing that seems decent. But we have like an art house theater in Grand Rapids here, and they like always do like niche, like kind of artsy older movies or like fun kind of movies like When Harry Met Sally and stuff. And I've been lately going to places like that. It's like more kind of,
it's cool.
It's cheaper and there's like more of like a community of people that like care It's not just like going to a movie theater on a Thursday. It's like everyone is around after and talks about it and stuff.
I guess you guys ruined my theory, and Matt was, but maybe Matt's right that this group of people happens to go to the movie. But I do think, like, I hear of filmmakers who have like teenage daughters that are like, oh, that movie's over 2 hours. There's no way I would go waste my time in the movie theater when I could be like hanging out with my friends or on YouTube or doing these. Like, I do think as a business and an industry, and yeah, of course there's going to be like John Waters night and like a few thousand people will go see it. But like the Barbenheimers, like unless that it's all Barbenheimers, then it just seems hard to figure out.
Yeah,
I think it could be a lower rent. I guess like what I was saying is like that's not that it has to be John Waters, but I think that's again, I think where I'm hopeful, because I feel like there's maybe this, again, it's going to be tough. I'm not saying, oh, it's going to just be like roses and everything's going to be great. But I do think because everything has been so cut back that when we start to see these like original things that maybe is a midnight screening or is an event style movie, like you're saying A24 movies, like people are that, I wish there was more smaller movies that just did well, like in the old days where you're like, oh yeah, word of mouth got around about this one little movie playing at this art house and then it got wider released. And it's not going to be streaming for like a couple months. Like you're not going to be like, oh, I'll just wait till next week when it's on a streamer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if those movies only cost $10 to $20 million, then I, in theory, only need to make 50, 60 plus whatever they spend on marketing, you know? Yeah. I'm hopeful for that too. I mean, there's some Christine Vachon Killer Films interview where she seems to think that there's going to be a resurgence in these kind of like mid-level films. And I just hope she's right.
Yeah. I guess the thing I'm most excited about actually is like advertising coming back to like the streaming services. You know, Amazon Prime is going to have ads and like,
hold on. Can I just pause really quick? The thing that I'm most excited about is advertising. Well, for your commercial directors. Yeah.
So we're all praying for cinema culture to come back. And Oren's like,
well, no, because
Doritos commercials coming my way.
The big picture is I want somebody to be paying for us to make this stuff. You can't make $100 million episodes of Game of Thrones reboots and not have somebody paying $6 a month for it. You know, like, you need 100 million subscribers, you know, and now they have to subscribe to like 20 different services. As soon as you get advertisers, like the advertisers are paying for the shows. And yes, as a commercial director, it does. Yeah. I worry about commercials too. Like, you know, I think there was a time where it's like nobody, kids don't even know commercials, you know, like what that is.
Now they're on YouTube.
What? On YouTube?
They're on YouTube. That's where kids like,
yeah, see where they ads see commercials. Yeah. From a business standpoint, I want, you know, Nestle and Pepsi to pay for my Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And then it's not,
funny you keep
the onus isn't on
Game
us.
Of Thrones, right? Like, again, bringing
right,
up the
profitable.
Pound. HBO was a profitable business, but just got absorbed by
streamer. Yeah. Sorry. Game of Thrones is a bad example, but, you know, some of these other shows that like these Arrow or whatever, some of these like shows that had a ton of viewers that are, they're like, oh, now we can't sustain this very expensive show to make.
What we're really, I think, talking about is that like streamers managed to dilute the value of movies, right? Mm-hmm. We're really talking about like, we wish that there were real marketing campaigns, right? Like it'd be fine if Netflix put out a movie every single week, if we could name most of them, if people are aware of them and we cared about them, and in the same way that Noah loves talking about a movie after he sees it at the local art house theater, if it was a part of culture in the same way, none of us would be lamenting it. Do you know what I mean?
Or that if like Marvel put out a movie and most people weren't like, oh, well, I can just watch that on Disney Plus, you know, in like a month. So why am I going to pay?
Or if it wasn't the same plot of any other movie, like Marvel movie that came out. That
out of curiosity, did anyone here watch The Holdovers?
Yes.
Right? I haven't seen it yet.
So I'm very curious about that one. It's Alexander Payne, who's been an Oscar contender every time he's made a movie for the last 20 years, right? Started as an indie guy. But the thing that's interesting about it, to Maureen, you made me think of it, the windowing is there, but it's very short. So it had a real theatrical run. We all heard of it, but it's already on Peacock. There was a VOD window of like maybe 2 weeks, and now it's streaming. And it's probably going to be up for a few Oscars.
And yeah, so also not a, but not an expensive movie to make. I mean, except for sure. talent, maybe Paul Giamatti,
probably $10-20 million, like Carlin was saying. Right. So
yeah,
if you can make a movie that we all care about and you can see it at home if you want to and capitalize on that marketing opportunity or watch it in the theater and it wins awards, that's interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's like goes like Salt Burns like that. Like everyone's like, got to go see it, or even Poor Things. You know,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's like like that. You got to go see it. Like I think Salt Burn, you can go see it in the theater still, but it is like it's on. You can watch it at home too.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
right.
But I think there is a push to be. You should see it in the theater because it's more of a communal experience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, it's like oh, people are oohing and aahing and shocked in the audience. Like that's part of the fun. It's funny. I went to see Poor Things, and I don't think I've laughed as hard as I've laughed in a long time in a theater. And a stranger came up to me and my friend afterwards, and she's like, hearing you laugh through the whole movie made my experience. I was like, what? Aww. And she's like, my friend and you guys were the only people laughing in the whole theater. I was like, what? Really?
Roxy, I feel like we haven't heard from you for too long. But seriously, like I think of all of us on this panel, you're the most kind of all over the place, not in a bad way, but you produce, you write, you do a feature, you go do a TV horror show like Blumhouse thing or a Eli Roth thing in Canada. You've done digital series. You kind of every time we talk to you, you're doing something totally different. And I think I don't think I was on the last episode that you were on, but the episode before that, you had basically started turning down a bunch of jobs that you didn't want and then kind of had like this low point and then got like the best offer of your life. And where are you now? What did you do that thing? Are you still kind of saying no a lot, saying yes a lot? Are you?
I don't know. I feel like I can't really contribute to so much of what you guys were talking about because I just completely unplugged last year. Like I know the strike was happening. I went out for the first few weeks. But it just made me so depressed. And I had to, for the sake of my mental health, just like stop looking at everything. I know there's an oversaturation of content. I know that like I'm getting IP fatigue. I'm just not feeling as connected as I would watching cinema the way that I used to. I did make that movie. I did an episode with Matt and I talked about all the trauma I had from it and that it was the hardest thing I've ever done. And it really affected me. And then I picked up crochet, you know, where I have so much creative freedom where I can control it as a Virgo moon. A lot has been, you know, my movie just got into a big festival, which I can't announce yet. You know, I kind of hate Hollywood right now. Like I kind of don't love the system. Do any of us, right? And I've just been really harnessing my focus on how to be creative in every moment, reading, you know, just really finding my creativity in every single outlet and being present in every moment. So I used to be, I mean, Carlin and Marino, I used to be such a fucking social whore. Like I was always out of community. I was always networking. I was always like, I was just like the freaking crazy person. And somehow this has just, I've just changed 180 and I'm just being super intentional about everything I'm making, slowing things down. And yeah, now the work that comes, it doesn't really feel as high anymore. Every recognition, every award doesn't make me feel as, you know, it doesn't feel as good as it used to. And now everything that matters is the work. And so I'm sitting with that, you know? I mean, yeah, I'm attached to a couple things. We've been having a ton of meetings and it's the usual same old hurry up and wait thing, but I'm not insecure about anything anymore. You know, I don't care because I know I'm good, you know, and like, I know that I'm gonna create great shit, like, and everybody here will, you know, but we just got to stop playing into the system because it sucks, right? You just got to stand true to what you want to do.
I love what you're saying, like the high, it almost feels like you got over the addiction because I think working in this town is an addiction.
It is.
And then the lows are low.
It is. You're just like, what am I doing wrong? How do we work the system? How do we work through this crisis now, this unprecedented collective thing that we're all going through? And I'm sick and tired of it. And so now I'm the happiest I've ever been this past year internally because I'm like, okay, now I learned that I don't need to just always be hustling and chasing things. I can focus myself on this movie that I love doing and, you know, empower everyone to feel excited about it, get everyone to bleed in it with me. And then you will be rewarded because you did that, right? I know that everyone's like, always be thinking about your next thing, you know, but like, I was trying to get this job in Ireland, I think halfway through post. And I like really wanted it because that's like, you need that for, you know, we just need money to survive.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get it. And at first I was sad. But then I had like all this time to like really slow down and pay attention to my film. Whereas in the past, I would have been like, okay, well, I think that works. Like, yeah, let's move on. Let's make that delivery. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm just, I feel like we just have to just strip that away. I mean, I'm reading this great book called The Path to Paradise about Francis Ford Coppola's, you know, experience making Apocalypse Now. And like my manager gave it to me.
Cool.
And, you know, he's like, you think that you had it bad when you were shooting Atlas? And he said, you're not alone. You know, like this was 1,000 times worse. And, you know, it's like, this is part of your fight. And you just have to teach yourself to be in the moment and just stay true to your art no matter what. And just be you and just be Roxy and just, you know, just continue to do it for the right reasons. And so it's been like a complete, I know I'm always like the spiritual woo-woo person on here. Because I just like hate Hollywood right now.
I think you still are doing it like that, because what you're saying is connecting to with me so much, because I do think the thing that came out of Strike for me was like, I started therapy. I like started working on, like I had time because there was no work to actually do all of the like internal work that like I was always pushing aside because I was always hustling. And then I think that's why I had writer's block too, because I think my body and my brain was like, nope, like we're not going to, you're not going to just continue to feed the beast of like work, work, work. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to have to sit with yourself. And like, and I think that, that's also, I think what makes me feel hopeful is that I think a lot of people were going through that. And that means that everyone's art and storytelling coming out of it is going to be even better, because it's everyone, I mean, not everyone, but the people that I know that like cared about that. Like, it's just, it's like refocusing on, like you're saying, your art, yourself, and what do you want to say and what stories you want to tell and who do you want to help?
Yeah. Have you read The Creative Way of Being by Rick Rubin? Have you guys read that book?
No, but all his TikTok clips are my favorite.
They are pretty good.
Oh my God. Wait,
I think
wait,
it came
I just
up
have
last
to...
episode, right?
Oh.
Okay, yeah. I have to just share this one thing I read, because my manager also gave me this book. He's like the best. He's just like always giving me really good material. Aww. And you know how we experience writer's block, and or we experience creative blocks in general. And sometimes in the past, I would be like, oh, I'm just waiting for that inspiration to strike once a year, and then I could poop out whatever it is that I want to write. But he said, inspiration is like the sun. Like even on a cloudy day, even if it's sunny, when it's sunny, you know the sun is there. But on a cloudy day, you know the sun is still exists, right? Mm-hmm. It's just behind the cloud, but it's there. You just need to know how to access it, right? So it's about saying that like creativity is like spirituality. It's all about faith. It's like not needing proof. So you can harness this at any time. You know, there's like, if you just eliminate the idea of a block, right? Mm-hmm. It's then we are able to access it in any single moment. And I don't know this, I don't know if we're doing the unsolicited, you know, but this is such a great book, because
unpaid
it's like,
endorsements, right?
Oh, right. Unsolicited Pick is my podcast, Two Horny Goats. Never mind. It's kind of like Julia Cameron's book, you know, it's just about how to access your
source.
Oh,
the artist's way.
The artist's way. And
it's on my desk. Hold on.
Oh my God. Morning pages.
Morning pages, bitches.
Bitches.
The thing that I have been thinking about the most is this idea that I think when we all started, we had a different idea of what a directing career would look like, right? You know, you think you want to be a feature director or a studio director, an indie director, a commercial director, whatever, TV director, all that stuff. And they were all relatively siloed. You know, when we were starting, the idea that you could do a commercial and then you could go shoot a pilot and then you could go do a feature was relatively uncommon still. Like people were supposed to be stay in their lane, so to speak. And I think that the last few years have taught us that we have to have a diverse array of projects going. If you have just one thing and that's the thing you're counting on, you know, if that doesn't pan out, you're in real trouble, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's good to have a diverse portfolio, so to speak. But that as a result, it's hard to specialize, right? And we all have seen how it's good to jump around a little bit. You learn something on a commercial job that you can, you know, put towards narrative or whatever. What I'm asking you all is, what does a director's career look like now? Say you're young Noah here, right? He's at the dawn of his career.
Going to be 18 soon. You get to watch this rated R film.
In a couple of years, I'll be able to drink. Finally.
Oh, baby.
Wait, for real?
No, I'm 26 years old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, oh my God, what?
I'm like, this is
it's child labor law.
Baby. Yeah, yeah, this is illegal.
But so like, what do you say to a young filmmaker or to yourself? Like, what expectations do you have for what you want your career to look like in this environment?
I would say don't label yourself, because I think once you say you want to become a director, all of these really high expectations naturally come to the forefront of your mind. You know, it's like what you need to accomplish, you know, these certain goals that you have to hit. And, you know, I teach part-time at Art Center now, so I like talk to a lot of students with a lot of that anxiety. And I'm just like, give yourself permission to change any fucking time you want. Like, you're an artist through and through. You're a storyteller through and through. Storytelling can exist in podcasting, in filmmaking, in teaching and learning, in crochet and tarot cards, like whatever, you know, like don't let anything define that success for you. Like now I just want to direct maybe one project a year if that is mm-hmm. continues to be great, because I don't want to be on set all the time. There, I said it. I'm tired, you know? Huh. I'm old, okay? Like, I want to be a grandma. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to contribute all these other parts of, and I never knew this was, could be what this looked like. Like, when my director friends and I used to chit-chat, I mean, when the film Fatales, you know, which is how I know Maureen and Carlin, it's like, we're just like, how do we get the next thing? Like, what are we doing now? What are we working on? And it's just this high-stress environment, when in reality, you know, it's a privilege, and it's beautiful, you know, and if you let go of those expectations and you find that authenticity, things will happen much more organically for you. Mm-hmm. And if that's true, you know, then things will happen, guaranteed. You don't have, the more you worry about it, the less it will come. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is interesting that you use the word privilege, because I totally agree with you that it is like filmmaking is a privilege. Like none of us need to be making films. That like the world doesn't necessarily have to have, like the world will be fine if none of us ever made another film, you know?
True.
Yes. But it's a privilege that we get to work on these things and get to like make believe for a living.
Individually, it is a privilege for all of us. I do want to push back on, you know, I think somebody made the point during the pandemic of like, what would any of us have done if there wasn't a TV show to watch, or there wasn't a movie to watch, or music to listen to, or a book to read, right? When the shit hits the fan, people need art, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's not important. I'm saying it's like, you know, the Craig Mazin and John August always talk about like getting into being a successful Hollywood writer is like being a successful NFL player, like sure, odds wise, sure. You know, like how many people want to be in the NFL versus how many people get to do it? It's like,
Yeah, it's like I had a conversation with a director, a female director that was transitioning out of, you know, another department. Mm-hmm. And talking to her was like talking to a younger version of myself, which is so fucking weird, because she's like, I just got signed. I did my first TV movie. Like, why isn't this happening now? Like, if they get me in front of these like TV show execs, like I can show them I work harder than anyone else and I will do it better than anyone else. And I'm like, you don't know that. What makes you think that you're better than anyone else? You're not, you know, like that's a thing I had to learn, was everyone is different and everyone is great and everyone has their own tool belt and resources. Even if you fight for it and you push and push and push, like that's not authenticity, right? And you're also not creating more room at the table. You are limiting it. You are pushing other people out, right? So if it's not me that's sitting here making this movie, it's going to be somebody else who looks like me, who has a different experience living in my skin and my hair color and my gender identity, that's going to tell something different, but it's still very valid, you know? So yeah, like it's just such a dog eat dog world in this industry, which is why I hate it right now. But I think like that is what I want to change, you know? Like that's not, like, don't think that don't put yourself in the center of it. Like, be honest, but use that instead.
I totally agree with what Rox is saying, but I guess I have a different prism, which I look through that from, mm-hmm. right? Is that it is a privilege, but also we're sitting in a place that we did go through all that stuff to get to where we are. So I think yes. it's harder for somebody out of the gate to be like, I'm not going to label myself. I'm not going to like do all the things that I need to do to like do the work to find out what kinds of stories and what I need to tell. And then the other part of that is we make the culture. So sure. I want to change things because we make the fucking culture. And look at all the culture that has fucked us up because certain people were the only ones getting to make the culture that we all eat and consume and believe, and that this is who a hero is. This is who you should, this is the love interest. This is what this person looks like. And if there aren't more people at the table, again, telling stories from different vantage points and prisms, that's how the culture stays the same. And so I think we need all kinds of fighters. We need people outside yes. the system. We need people within the system. We need people that are like, I'm an artist, you can't box me. And there are people that play the game, but like, you know, and so to me, I think when I would give advice to, and it's funny, somebody just asked me this at like a party. They were like, came over and they're like, I want to get in an industry. And I was like, they kind of wanted to do too many things. They were like, well, I kind of want to be an actor and I want to be a writer, but I want to direct. And I'm like, this is totally fine to not know, but like, you got to figure that out. Like, he's like, I do make content. I was like, okay, do you want to be a content creator? Do you want to be a storyteller? Like, there are so many things. And so if you're just using like I make content, I'm like, no, I'm telling you to tell stories. Like it was, so I'm like, I think you have to figure out, yeah, what do you want to get?
Yeah.
And you have to figure out, like, you know, for me, I think we're all the same where we all have done so many things. And so often when people would meet me, be like, I'm so confused by you. You like did Jimmy Kimmel shorts. You do magical realist cupcake things. You do Lifetime thriller movies. Like, what are you doing? You know, or like, and then it's only now where I'm like, okay, I come from a weird mixed family. It's like Irish Catholic, Indian Pakistani Muslim. I put things that don't go together and tonally make them work. Like, so I was figuring out like, yeah, why am I drawn to all these different things? How do I make that work? And so now it's like easier for me to be like, yeah, I did this and this, but the through line is me. And what do I bring to the table? And so I think that's what I think is important, is to just make stuff and figure out what you're trying to say.
And make room for others, because I hate the competitiveness, yeah. you know, like it's horrid.
Yeah, there's room for everybody, like yes, truly. True. But sometimes some people have to put some of that fucking pie back.
Yeah.
Because you got to the party early and you took all the pie. And so don't get all upset.
Like, I think what our podcast is about, or at least what it's been about the last 3 years, is like, how do we make this thing that we're so privileged to get to do and so lucky to get to do? And like Maureen is saying, it's fought so hard to get into the room and battled like the trends and did the labels and no labels, and we do everything and we do nothing, and saying no to everything and then saying yes to everything. Like, how do we mix this privilege of this career, of directing, with making a career out of it? With like Carlin, you got married and bought a house this year. Matt bought a house and had a baby last year. Like, it's, you know, when at some point, and the reason I, you know, like, I think it's fun having like Noah and Tyler on is because they are really young, you know, and they aren't as tied down to these things. Like, Noah could go to Brazil to shoot something for 2 months tomorrow if he needed to. And I don't think that I could
do it. Spirit of adventure. Good for you, kid.
Sure. Like, I mean, is it a young person's game? Because it is a privilege. And at some point you realize like you're done hustling and competing and you don't want to fight for the piece of the pie like every week? Or is there a way to just be happy? And like, do 20 years from now, can you see yourself doing the same thing you're doing this year as a director and being like equally happy?
I see nods from Carlin and Maureen.
I think yes. I just hope I'm making a little bit more money doing it.
Right. But how does that square with like the pie? You know?
Maureen, I was thinking about, sorry, you go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
I was thinking about the thing you said about the pie, and I've been wondering about that too. And I'm just, so in commercials during the strike, it happened to me. I'm assuming it happened to Oren and other people. Like, I can say this. I was up for some job and then they called me and they said, actually, Adam McKay is going to direct it. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Adam McKay is going to direct this.
Name, like, by the way.
Yeah, and I thought I'm a huge fan of his. Like, but and also, if I were at an agency and who someone you've never heard of, or Adam McKay, the Oscar winner, I would be like, absolutely, I'm going to go with Adam McKay. But then again, on the flip side, like I said yes to a social media directing job at the end of last month, which is kind of below me, but I have a mortgage, you know, and I don't know. And I'm like, did I take the pie? It's just complicated. And I'm like, there are some commercial directors that I know of that actually have helped bring up other like young people of color and women, like, and will co-direct with them and then let them take the credit. And that, you know, there are ways in commercials that I've seen this happen. It's rare. Yeah, maybe in TV.
I heard that a lot. That, like, I have a lot of friends. I tried to get into commercials, you know, back into commercials this year, and it didn't work because this thing where everyone's like, yeah. Nobody has jobs. I mean, here's the thing. I hope that in 20 years, if I'm at that level, I don't need it. And if it's feast or famine and there's a famine, I would hope that, like, if I'm at a certain level, making a certain amount of money, that I would recognize that there are people that there's a famine.
Yeah.
And that I would maybe just pull back on my stuff. And I think this too, like right now I'm like, and I'm not going to name names, but I'm like, sometimes these big, huge directors, they're doing these huge, big budget movies. If I get to that place, I hope that, like, if I get a budget of like, whatever, $250 million, I'd be like, can we just allocate $5 million for like a fun, cool filmmaker? Because you're going to make my movie regardless. So I need to leverage that for other people. So I think it is like, how much is enough for you? I don't know. Right. Like, some people are like, I want it all forever.
Yeah.
But, and maybe this industry is also feast or famine. So we have to, like, you know, feast when we can, because we could be paupers at any moment. But that's also capitalism. Like, we're all always
when we are able to feast, we got to Robin Hood that shit. You know, we got to Robin Hood that shit.
It's interesting, though. It's also just like interesting to think about and kind of notice in our own jobs and careers, you know, how is that hierarchy and how do we, you know, and I know we're all conscientious people who are trying to help the next generation, but it's always good to think
about. And again, I wouldn't also, like, you know, when people do, again, I don't know, maybe I would do the same, but when I look at shows and I'm like, oh, one director's directing the whole season, I'm like,
I know,
they couldn't just, like, kick off, like, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, that's great and great for you, but that also means that there's nothing for anybody else.
Right.
So I don't know. I think it's like the mindfulness of, like, whatever that means to you. I don't know. Mm. And that's like a personal thing, but I think that's a problem with capitalism too.
Absolutely.
I think as long as we're consistent, you know, people do all these New Year's goals and stuff and they're so lofty. I read mine. I don't accomplish half of them, but I think, like, where we are right now, just keep moving, just keep going. Like, you know, things are going to be great for us. And I think recalibrating my mindset has helped me so much. You know, just seeing things differently and shifting my perspective.
I really think that cultivating this attitude may be something that we can all do and help. Is that, like, you know, I've had friends that they've met on shows and then they've told me that they're looking. Like, they don't have to do that. That's putting out more competition. So it's like, oh, when someone does that to me, I'm like, oh, if I hear that someone should be good for that show. Sorry, like if I'm. So it's like, there's like a show looking for directors, right? And so some of my close friends that have met on that show might be like, oh, this show's looking. The showrunner, there's a spot, they're looking for directors. They have two spots open. They have one spot open. And so it's like, I think our mentality would be like, I don't want to tell anybody because I want to get it. Mm-hmm. I want it.
Don't spread the word that the show is looking for directors because I don't want that much competition. Right. The less competition, but then the better.
Yeah. And I've had multiple occasions where women in particular have been like, I met on the show. I think you'd be good too. And so, and again, if I lose out on a show, I want it to be to my friend. I want it to be to somebody that, like,
totally.
It's like, oh, I there is, like, I'm as happy for them to get it as I wish I did. Of course, we all want money right now because everyone is, like, in the famine phase.
They deserve it. They're the right person for the part.
Here's the thing that happened with a show that I,
like,
I can't name the show, but this happened. I was like, I really wanted this one show. And a friend of mine was also up for it. And I was like, you know what? You haven't done episodes of TV. And I was like, she got a meeting and I didn't. And I was like, damn it. But she's like, we have any advice? And I immediately was like, here's what I would do. Like, I would say this, this, this. I hope you get it. Like, and I was bummed I didn't get a meeting, but I was so happy that she did. And again, I'm like, I need a job.
How do you
and
get a meeting if you've never directed episodic? How tell me the secret.
She had a movie.
She had a movie. And so like the movie is like kind of buzzy. And so it's even with that, it's hard to get an episode of TV. And in the end, she got the episode and I hadn't heard that I got one yet. And I was like, I'm so happy for you. And I truly was. I was like, you know what? Like, she has never gotten an episode of TV. Like, she deserves it. Like, she deserves it as much as I do. I'm bummed that I didn't get it, but she got it. And I'm truly actually happy for her. In the end, I also got an episode. But I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad that I didn't like withhold information or like be bitter about it or be like, well, if I'm not getting it, I don't want you to have it. Like, I think just that mindset makes it easier for the, like when you don't get stuff, especially if it's like people that you love and you know in this industry that are good people that deserve it.
Yes.
You know, it's like different when you get people that you think are sucky and don't deserve it. You're like, you know, fuck them. But
yeah, that's like you want it to have justice, you know, it's like every choice. Like if someone's telling a certain story, like I also had a very similar experience this past year where I really wanted this movie and I was fighting so hard to get into the room. And I was like, why haven't they called me? Like, why have I not been given the script for this movie? Right. I fought so fucking hard. And like, this movie just needs to be directed by an Asian woman. And the announcement is that it's not. You know, and it just created like this flurry of just reactions from our community, right? And then I'm just like, it's so unjust. Like when it's a situation like that and you're just like, how can they make a decision like this? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That really makes me feel my blood boils. And I'm like working on my jealousy and working on my bitterness, you know, because these are natural feelings that you get because we're human, you know? But
yeah,
I agree with Maureen. Sure. Like, you want to create that space and we're here to help each other and to love each other and to support each other. Because if it's not that, then we're not doing the work. You know what I'm saying? Because it's about all of us, right?
Mm-hmm. Again, and I want to lose out to people that I love rather than people that I hate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can we each just go through just one kind of specific-ish goal for 2024? Something that we want? I can start if that...
Yeah,
yes.
Go ahead, Oren.
Go ahead. Get it,
Kevin. Take it.
So I really, really, really want to make some sort of inroads to TV. It's something that like I've been wanting to, you know, work in TV forever. I've done episodic stuff, digital series, Go 90 shows, all the things. I've worked with, you know, many actors and crew sizes and everything. My wife is an actor, has been in a lot of TV shows. Like, I feel like from a skill, technical, like personality, tonal level, like everything, I'm ready. But, you know, we talk about like when we talked about privilege, like I don't know why I would deserve it over anyone else, but I really want it, you know? And so my goal for this year, it's already January 4th. So I would love to get an episode of TV. I think that's a little ambitious, but I would at least like to make some inroads with, you know, I applied to this DGA mentorship program. We'll see for TV. We'll see if I still haven't heard anything. Other than I have like a scripted podcast that hopefully if it's made this year, for Audible can maybe, you know, if it gets any traction can turn into a TV show, but I really want to like, put out like a like figure out some way into making TV. Ideally it's getting an episode of a show that already exists because that seems like the shortest path. But that's kind of my goal. And last time I set a goal on this podcast, it took me like 3 years to achieve it.
But you achieved it.
Yeah. So very good. That's my goal for 2024.
You can do it, Oren.
That feels like a very achievable goal.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Just give me the guide map.
You gotta have faith. The sun is behind the clouds, Oren. But it's there.
God reached for it. Permanent.
It is. I do believe that. I believe there's a way. I just have to find it.
My goal for this year is to make my fifth movie. Like I have a movie that I've written that we kind of went down during the strike to stop writing, but we're back up. And so that would be my, I hope to be shooting that movie next winter. Probably the biggest budget movie that I've done. But yeah, like so that's a goal that I really
winter 2024.
Yeah, it's like I need to shoot in the snow. So it would have to be in the winter. Mm, yeah. But I hope that's good time to get the financing. And we have Merman is producing it. So we have the script and stuff. And so, yeah, just to get the money. So I need the money to make the movie.
Yes. You will get the money, Maureen. You will get all the financing. You will shoot in the snow.
I need the billionaires.
Yeah.
Also, Roxy, have you ever heard of Stars Collective? I went to this weird gala. It's just filled with Asian billionaires that invest in movies. So they invested in 10 movies. So go, man. Like,
oh my God. I just am so good at talking to billionaires. I'm so money.
Yeah, believable.
I'm going to need some training on this. Can someone help me? What do you talk to billionaires about?
Human rights? I don't know.
Yeah.
Human rights. IRAs.
Going to space.
Oh, mine's straightforward, actually. The movie I've been working on that we've talked about for the last 2 years. This is the year. Making offers. You know, a lot of stuff has to happen to get it, but this is the year. This is the year.
The year that you go into production?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be a Renaissance woman. I'm just trying to do everything before I die. You know what I'm saying?
That's your goal.
Live
in
my
2024.
Fullest, live my fullest and best life. Just be everything and nothing at once. You know, mm-hmm. I'm attached to a couple of projects, pitching on a few, but there is this one particular movie that I am so excited to make, and we're just trying to attach talent right now for financing, and I'm so excited about it. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like it's going to be good, you know? And then in the meantime, still teaching my students and still, I'm dropping Studio Roxy, which is my online shop. Just a quick plug there. You want to check out my I'm a Capricorn. I got to capitalize every single fucking hobby I do. Okay.
StudioRoxy.com.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. R-O-X-Y.
Yeah. But I'm the happiest I've ever been. And I think it's because I just allow myself to be fucking crazy and unapologetic and exercising my no, and also being rude as an Asian woman for the first time and finding it kind of liberating, and people take you more seriously and all these other things. Anyways, I'm rambling, but I think finding my true self, that is my goal for this year.
You know, I too have sort of, I've had many, I've talked about many movies that I've put together that have not happened over the years that I've been on this podcast. So I'm sort of done making predictions personally about what I'm shooting this year. Mm-hmm. But I do want, I think the thing that I think at this point I can relax a little bit about my commercial career, because I've made now 3 years in a row a pretty consistent amount of money. Mm-hmm. So now my goal for this year is to trust that the jobs are going to come, maybe not as many as I'd like, and maybe it's not going to be easy, who knows, but I'm going to trust that I will be able to get by on those jobs and really create space for my creator self. Because last year I really focused more on kind of making money, and I got married and I bought a house, and I built my foundation of my life, you know, and now I have a wife, I have this house, I have roots. And so now I feel like I'm able to just breathe a little bit. I have this new office that has nothing on the walls, as you can see, but, I really am feeling like I'm ready to do really good work. I don't know how long it's going to take. And I'm realizing about myself, I'm not a writer that is super fast and that pumps out stuff all the time, but I think the quality of what I create tends to be higher. And so I'm just going to keep pushing that. I just want to invest in that part of me.
Yeah. You know, Carlin, I think you've inspired me. I'd gotten away from writing. Mm-hmm. You know, I partially the things we've all been complaining about, right? Churn, that anxiety. You know, I'd wake up and I'd just start pitching people, that grind. If there was any other job that I had, I would do that instead of writing. And I think also now the baby sleeps in long enough that if I wake up early, I can still put in a real writing session.
Hour or two. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I've been writing this week. And that's awesome. Actually my, I don't want to say my real goal, because I want to make this movie, but the other one is just consistently writing, putting in the reps.
Because you have control over that.
Noah, what about you?
So we're submitting the feature to festivals and stuff, and kind of the main goal for this next year is like getting it into as many festivals as possible and just kind of doing that for the first time and experiencing that and trying to just like wiggle up to the next step of it all and just like keep going. I'm writing my second feature right now. It's like the first one was this like two hander that's like really dinky and we made it for barely any money. And this next one is like a holiday movie with, instead of two people, it's five people. So it's just like not being crazy ambitious. It's just like the next step and like a little bit more locations and a little bit more ambitious with like music stuff and what I'm trying to talk about. So just kind of finishing the next script and just making moves to try to make this next tiny budget movie, just because it's the thing that I know that I'm capable of doing mm-hmm. with where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. And then if anything comes along that path, like clinging to it and holding on and trying to make money and all of that stuff. But
I think you don't need any of our advice. Like, you're like, oh yeah, but like, that sounds great.
Slay, Noah, slay.
You saw the name of the podcast and it all made sense to him. Do you, mm-hmm. you were flirting with moving to LA a little bit. Is that still in the cards for you?
That's the tricky thing. I swear I complain to you guys like every other month, like, man, I should just go to LA. Cause like a couple years ago, I like impulsively moved to Chicago and slept on people's couches and stuff, but it like really sucked. And I had like no money. But it would be like this like entirely different thing. It would be like that, but like elevated, cause LA is even more expensive than Chicago and things like that. And
but it's warmer. If
it is warmer, it's less cold.
Your whole sweater budget.
Yeah,
take that
way lower.
But it's kind of like a we'll see thing. I do. It's definitely something I really want to do. But if I'm going to do it, I want to do it smartly and safely, and with like a chunk of money to make sure that I'm okay. And like, I have like a good support system here, and kind of like a solid crew kind of situation where like if we wanted to make something in like 3 weeks or like a couple months, everyone would be down. It's just like figuring out the money of it all, and we could do another thing like we did with this first one.
Where do you live again?
In Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I feel like you're just starting a movement there.
it's like I teeter-totter on it a lot, but it feels like the energy is kind of that's what's going on, and trying to stick to this like weird duplicism mindset of just like really just trying to, you know, dig your foot in the dirt and just be like, this is where I'm planting my treehouse. We're gonna figure it out.
Yes.
You know, like we'll build a treehouse over here and just kind of figure it out or something, you know?
Revolutionary, Noah.
Well, that's great. Yeah. I mean, LA is, you know, we like it just because it's where people try to take this hobby of filmmaking and turn it into a career. Tyler, what about you?
Yeah, I'd say my goals this year, I mean, yeah, I just moved here a month ago and I've just been like trying to meet as many people and like make friends. And yeah, so I want to finish a feature script, which I've never done before. Like I've never really gone into writing. I did it in college and haven't done it since. And direct some sketch comedy is kind of my goal. And that's moving cool. here, like I made some friends that like, were like, oh, we should do some sketch comedy stuff. So no, you know, you should do it. Oh, I don't know.
Well, awesome. Do you all have a few more minutes just to do some unpaid endorsements with us? Roxy, this will be totally unsolicited.
That's right.
No, wait, I have to get the book.
Unpaid endorsements.
My unpaid endorsement is Ted Hope, indie film producer who ran Amazon, their film division for a long while, and made it. But like, he's the one who brought all of the kind of classic 90s directors over to Amazon to make those movies when they were first launching. Anyway, he has a Substack and a book called Hope for Film, but also his Substack is called Hope for Film. Like I said, Ted Hope. And he's got This List Will Change Your Life. It's a list of different 130 easy steps to make your life better as a filmmaker or any creative professional. Mm-hmm. And it's filled with all sorts of just insight he's gathered over his career, things like listen before you speak. All hierarchies are false. Number three, keep the good ones close. Little maxims. It's a good way to start the year. Just kind of reminding yourself of all of these little tiny little lessons that he's picked up along the way that specifically are about being creative. And I think maybe kind of ties up a lot of what we were talking about. Staying grounded, opening yourself up to artistic opportunities, all of that. So,
okay. So this is a brand new book. It just came out last year, 2023. Sam Wasson's book, The Path to Paradise, which chronicles what I said earlier about Francis Ford Coppola's Making of Apocalypse Now. And I think it has so much to do with what we're saying today, especially like Maureen, you were talking about like how we can reinvent like Hollywood and bring back art into cinema and like into filmmakers. Like this book chronicles so much of that. And it's actually really moving to read because Sam Wasson is like such a beautiful storyteller and the way that he tells like Coppola's story and like what he went through. And it's just to tell you that like filmmaking, even at its hardest, is worth it. I'm laughing because I wanted to quit.
You know, like, but it sounds
beautiful. This just goes to show you are not alone. So no matter if you're making a $500 feature or if you're making a $250 million feature, you're going to have challenges and you're going to have unprecedented shit happen to you. But like, I just find it very inspirational to read.
Sold. I'm going to get it.
Get it. And then
yeah,
we
me too.
Let's sold. Have a book club. Let's discuss it. And then we could crochet.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will watch you crochet. Okay. Mine is a sort of illegal. That's a really good way to start.
Is it about fighting your traffic ticket?
Is it about Noah being 17?
Yes, it's about Noah's youth.
Yeah, let's buy him cigarettes.
I didn't really think of a good one, but I'm just going to say something that has changed my life over the past 2 years, and that's psychedelics. Sorry, I know it sounds like a totally bananas in Los Angeles. And I'm not talking about just like doing them with your friends, like at a party, but like with a guide and with a group. And it's really like nothing has changed my mind more in a really beautiful, my cat is back there now, in a beautiful way. It's like
in a physical.
Yeah. I love to talk about this. Unfortunately, plant medicine.
Well, here we go. Let's get into it. I describe the differences between the like, oh, yeah, partying with your friends, we're all going to go see a movie or we're going to go to a concert or whatever, like the thing that people are probably pretty familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole group of underground. It's only, I really think this is going to be legal pretty soon, to be honest. Like the studies that they're doing, Noah's nodding his head.
I'm curious. I'm down.
Nothing has changed my mind more in a really beautiful, my cat is back there now, in a beautiful way. It's like, yeah, I love to talk about this. Unfortunately, plant medicine.
Describe the differences between the like, oh, partying with your friends, we're all going to go see a movie or we're going to go to a concert or whatever, like the thing that people are probably pretty familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole group of underground. It's only, I really think this is going to be legal pretty soon, to be honest. Like the studies that they're doing, Noah's nodding his head. I mean, the studies that they've done with MDMA, with psilocybin, with all these things, like it's helping anxiety and depression and veterans and people in unprecedented amounts. I mean, it's like, these studies are going so well. Not that it can work for everybody, and if you should be careful if you've taken SSRI type of drugs, you know, if you're on medication, like that gets a little dicey. But like the first time I did, like I'd done like shrooms with like friends growing up, but the first time I did it was like in a clinical setting with a guide who's sober and I'm dosed a certain amount with an eye mask on for hours. So it's like a therapy. So it's like set and setting is really
expensive.
I saw this analogy on, again, I don't want to be like TikTok, but yeah, it was like they were trying to describe, they're trying to describe like what it does, and they're like, and tell me if this is like a true analogy.
This is how they were like, psychedelics is what you're saying.
Yeah cool.
Yeah, is it like when you're skiing, right? It's easier to ski down grooves,
yes,
right? Because the grooves, it's easier. But then what doing psychedelics is like a fresh blanket of snow, yep, so that your brain can actually go and make new paths.
They've hooked up brains to people on psychedelics. And like normally when your brain is firing, it's like going down these certain paths and there may be like 10 to 20 paths kind of opening up. But on psychedelics, like hundreds of them are like online. And you're
creating hundreds of new neural pathways.
Yes, that's right. So it does. That's so how it helps you get out of like depression, anxiety, and trauma. Is like
the
showing
grooves of your brain.
Exactly, you're creating new grooves.
We all need this.
We do. Like this is that. Yeah. I'm like, look, I know I'm like woo woo California these days, but about
me
it.
Too.
But it really, it's really changed my life in a way that like I'm just so much more present and satisfied than I used to be. And so,
wait, is this covered by insurance?
No,
Lauren.
No.
She said it was illegal.
Technically illegal.
Yeah, many things nowadays, unfortunately, that are illegal are covered by insurance.
That's true. Yeah. Anyways, people can message me if they actually want to talk about this on Instagram.
I want to go do it.
Okay.
That sounds fun.
How much does it cost?
Well, it costs not that much. Like, you know, it depends what sort of setting.
Like less than $200?
I think if you're doing it with friends, less than $200. But if you're paying
a guide.
How
much is this guide person?
Well, you're also paying people for your time. And it's like a 6-hour thing. 6 to 8 hour thing.
6 hours.
I don't mind paying someone to like actually guide me through that.
Right.
That's where you spend the money.
At least for the first time.
I can't even watch Killers of the Flower Moon. It's so long.
It's a journey
for that too.
3.5 hours.
Time is not the same when you're on sort of psychedelic. Time is a different thing. You know, you won't be bored.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, Maureen, what's your hopefully more legal and more affordable?
Maybe mine ties into both Roxy's and Carlin's.
I can't wait.
I'm just trying to think of like, oh, what do I want to endorse? But I actually feel like in the spirit of also the anti-capitalism, but still artistic, is I don't know if everybody's watched I'm a Virgo yet, but no. I feel like that Boots Riley series blew my mind. It's like anti-capitalist. It's for Amazon. It's so creatively amazing. It's all forced perspective shit. Like it just really like inspired me in a way that I haven't seen many things lately that even like his movie, like even the movie that he did, I'm Sorry to Bother You, I liked, but I like this TV show much better because I think it's structured and it's just really, really creative.
Tyler or Noah, who wants to go next?
I could go if you want, Tyler, or if you want.
I would love for you to go.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
This is Noah speaking, by the way.
Yeah, I'm speaking. Hi, it's Noah. I'm the editor of the show. My unpaid endorsement is a silly one. I am endorsing High School Musical.
The original?
That's awesome.
The original one.
The channel movie. Yeah.
The first
you know
one.
Who's directed by?
I see that coming.
All in this together. I know the choreography.
Yeah. I forgot the name of the dude, but like he directed like all
Kenny
three
Ortega.
Of them. Kenny Ortega.
Kenny Ortega. The Michael Jackson documentary.
I don't know much about him, but he just seems like a badass because I guess he also like choreographed like those movies too.
Dirty Dancing.
He used to be a dancer.
Yeah. He's a legend. Hocus Pocus. He directed Hocus Pocus.
Yeah. And he directed the Descendants movies and the Zombies movies if you guys watch Disney Channel.
Is that true? Okay.
I haven't seen those. But
yeah, his career is still blooming.
Good for him.
He's really going to skyrocket soon.
Yeah, totally.
He should give us some of that pie.
Yeah, hello, pie time.
I'll have some High School Musical pie. Like me and my friend Jessie Carl, who's like the lead actress in like the movie that I did, we've been like watching like movies from like our childhoods and stuff. And like High School Musical is one of those like movies that's not like a, you know, an art house movie that you tell all your film friends at film school that, oh, this is a movie that made me want to make movies. Like High School Musical is like the real answer. Along with like other superhero stuff or whatever, where it's like, you're like a little kid and it made you like excited about like watching movies and stuff. So the unpaid endorsement is like High School Musical, but it's also like, go back and watch like these like little kid movies that like you watch as like a kid that like made you excited about movies. If you've had like 5+ years of separation on them, I think it's like fun to go back and watch them with like a new lens. I think it's it was a really fun time, and they're really like sincere and just like campy, but just like really fun, really good movies.
I like that you had that because I just did that with Flight of the Navigator. I'm like, this is fucking dark. But you're right. It's nice to go back and be like, this movie influenced me.
Yeah.
Spending time with your inner child.
That's right.
That was kind of the mindset behind it is
getting back to your inner child.
Yeah.
I mean, Noah's pretty young. Barbie is one of the movies from his childhood also.
Damn.
Wow. Boom. Roasted.
Man.
Tyler, 1 year older than Noah.
Yeah. Man, listen to all of these has changed mine. In the psychedelics realm, everyone should watch Fantastic Fungi. It's
Oh my god, so good. Yes. So fascinating. Big into mushrooms.
Yes.
You made me lost me. I don't know.
This is feeling like
junior high stoner science fair project.
What's wrong with that, dude?
You guys are supposed to get a lava lamp.
Get a fucking lava lamp.
Let's reorder some lava lamps again. Dunkaroos so deliver natural.
Okay, yeah. Fantastic Fungi, for the record, doesn't really touch on psilocybin mushrooms. It touches on just sort of like the magic of mushrooms in general and how they have neural networks and they talk to trees. Like, mushrooms are really cool.
We saw Last of Us. We get it, okay?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. That was the Last of Us.
Yeah, mushrooms are so cool.
They are so cool. Wow. I really think this has been a great episode, guys.
Yeah. I'd say addition to that, snacky clusters from Trader Joe's. Have you guys tried those?
No. Oren knows all about snacks.
They're amazing.
Oh, yeah. The chocolate one. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Noah, what is it like editing these like recordings? They're all over the place. Or maybe, I don't know.
They are.
Sorry.
Wait. Do I get to go, man?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go for it.
I don't really have a good one, so I'm going to give it to you. First
if
of
you
all,
say peach tahine snack rings, I'm going to leave.
Have you guys heard?
Oh, God.
They're really good, the peach rings. Well, first of all, Ridley Scott, do you guys know how he shoots movies? My friend did the BTS on The Last Duel or whatever that Matt Damon movie was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was like, Ridley Scott has 8 cameras with complete camera crews on every single scene. Whoa. He does like 2 or 3 takes of a battle scene and is like, we got it. Let's move on. He's got, and I had heard that he had 11 cameras on Black Hawk Down, but I guess he has like just a shitload of cameras all the time. And he's like, he says he told me he never worked more than 10 hours in a day. Mm-hmm. He just has a ton of cameras.
He also comes in under budget, right? Which like when you're shooting a $100 million movie is a different
8 cameras
deal
for the action set pieces, right? Or like even for like talkie scenes.
He said for a drama scene, maybe he'll have like 4 cameras, but they have whole crews. Like each one has a first, second loader, camera PA, whatever. And it made me think like maybe some of these epic movies that we think of, you know, that are like, I always think of wide shots as some expensive movies have a lot of wide shots, and maybe it's just because all the cameras have to be far away. So they don't see each other on these like, Ridley Scott movies. But also I watched Napoleon, which everyone said is like so boring, but I really enjoyed it. I was going to like do work while I watched it on TV, and then I just didn't do any work. I was pretty into it. And if you're interested, you should Google Napoleon III, who actually had this giant reign and no one ever talks about him. People only talk about Napoleon I. But my other thing that I was going to talk about is, have you guys seen the movie Dream Scenario?
Not yet.
It's crazy.
I loved it.
Yeah. It's like, I thought it kind of, I don't know that it went anywhere like in the end, but the movie itself is just so fun. It's about dreams. You know, Nicolas Cage just starts showing up in random people's dreams. And people are like judging him based on what he's doing in their dreams, even though he has nothing to do with it that he knows of. But the director, his name is Christopher Borgli. And I think he's with Furlined, is the production company he's on their roster, like works with. And on their Instagram, Furlined Productions, which is Furlined Productions, the latest video on Instagram is like him doing a sleep test. He claims he's like practiced doing lucid dreaming for like years or for months to prepare for his movie. And they connect these like brain diodes to his brain. And this guy interviews him while he's lucid dreaming. And it's, you just have to watch it. It's just very bizarre.
That's
my favorite promo for a movie I've seen in a really long time. And thanks. Blake Benham sent it to me yesterday and he said, what is this question mark? So thanks, Blake.
It's also great. That movie's a great commentary on celebrity as well.
Yeah. Mm. Have you heard any interviews with the director about like why he wrote it? It was basically like, he's like, my dad is just so confused by technology in the modern world. And I just wanted to make a movie about that. And then Nicolas Cage kind of represents his dad as this guy that's like, what? I'm in your dreams. What am I supposed to do with that information? You know? Yeah. It's a really fun movie. And, you know, if you're into dream stuff, it's interesting. Before we finish, can everyone just tell the listeners how they can find you online, where they should follow you, what's happening, what podcasts you're making that they should listen to?
I'm Maureen Baruchet. Instagram is the way to follow me, even though I'm just Maureen, a creeper on TikTok.
B-H-A-R-O-O-C-H-A.
Yeah.
Baruchet, silent H, naturally.
Maureen Baruchet. Find me on Instagram. I post too much.
Find me at Instagram too, at Carlin with a Y Hudson. I'm not on a ton these days, I'll be honest, but I do check it twice a day on my computer. So if you message me, I will look at it because I have no self-control and I have to take it off my phone because I start comparing myself to people. I feel bad about myself and it gets taken off.
Love a self-aware.
So the cycle goes.
Nice.
At Roxy She, R-O-X-Y-S-H-I-H, my new crochet shop, Studio Roxy.
Hell yeah.
I am at Tyler W. Small on Instagram. And subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Super producer Tyler.
I'm at Noah Bayshore on Instagram and TikTok. And if you want to follow me on Letterboxd too, you could probably find me there too.
You can follow me across all social media at Mr. Matt Enlow. And you can follow the show at Just Shoot It Pod across all social media. You can email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com if you want to drop us a line. You have something important to say, you want to pitch us, etc. Et
Matt has left me out of the list of people, but I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. Happy New Year, everyone.
I queued you up.
This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Sorry, Noah. with producing by Tyler Small and Noah Bayshore. Thank you to Roxy, Carlin, Maureen, and even Matt. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.